couple of weeks ago, I spoke on the subject of the servant leadership that should characterize elders in a local church. And after that lesson, there were a couple of inquiries about the motives of presenting that sermon. And I suppose to some degree, we perhaps have been conditioned through the years of thinking about and talking about elders when it's actually time to be looking around and selecting them. And I really think that, if it in fact has been a weakness, I think that's something that needs to be corrected. And actually, the thoughts of that sermon and tonight and perhaps some others in the future came from a conversation I had with Martin Broadwell several months ago, in which we were talking about the importance of leadership among the people of God and the need to be aware of it on a more continuing basis, perhaps, than periodically as we're actually searching out for those who would shepherd the flock. And we talked a couple of weeks ago about the importance of not only the shepherds knowing the sheep, which tends to be probably most of the focus, but the sheep knowing the shepherds and the sheep knowing the potential shepherds. And this kind of examination, this kind of knowledge really should grow out of an ongoing consideration of each other and the attempt to build relationships with each other that are meaningful relationships, wherein we're sharing meaningful events and sharing our lives with each other, so that when the time comes for us to be considering this most crucial of decisions, who are we going to entrust to lead us? And who do we feel confident about following as a qualified leader among the people of God? That might not be so traumatic as it may tend to be, because the decisions will flow out of relationship and out of familiarity. So I suppose that's sort of the philosophy behind doing these lessons, and I said probably some others that will come in the future, to keep us aware on an ongoing basis. And there will come a time, probably in not the far too distant future, where we're going to be going through this process again. And hopefully this will lead into that at whatever point the elders may decide that we need to be searching amongst ourselves and prepare us for that. Christians are variously described in the Scriptures. This is not a picture of any of our shepherds or the sheep. But Christians are described in a number of different ways to bring out certain characteristics. And one of those descriptions does have to do with this local body in which we are involved as we live our lives out as Christians. We are to be guided and led and served by shepherds, implying that we then are the sheep. And we are sheep for various reasons, but one of the outstanding features of sheep is that they are vulnerable. Everything I know about sheep, folks, I've read. I didn't grow up on a farm, and I sure don't know anything about sheep firsthand. I did travel to Scotland a couple of times. But I understand that sheep are very vulnerable, almost defenseless, and they need protection. They need to be led into safe places. They need to be watched over and guarded at night, especially when predators are afoot. And it appears, it's interesting, as we've looked at from Job not too long ago in a sermon, how God has tailored various animals to have various characteristics. The ostrich on the one hand and the hawk or the eagle on the other. God makes each according to the features that He wants it to have. But when you talk about a sheep, you're not talking about an offensive animal. It doesn't really have any offensive weapons. And so sheep are vulnerable. And I think that certainly is true with the brethren as a whole. Perhaps the meekness that we are to demonstrate might, in the eyes of the world, make us appear to be vulnerable. But there are other qualities that we possess as God's children, being peaceable people, deferring to one another, counting others better than ourselves, trying to be innocent in relation to evil. They're qualities that might, in fact, make us vulnerable to unscrupulous people or those that would sow the seeds of false doctrine. And so being vulnerable, as God's people. He would have it that they be guided and led and protected by shepherds. And having said that, we need leadership in any collective endeavor among human beings. Leadership is nearly a necessity in all of them. When you talk about collective activities, you're talking about a variety of wills and preferences and opinions and weaknesses and tendencies, and all these things begin to flow out of us as individuals and tend to wreck collective efforts. And so, as we read this morning from Ephesians chapter 4, unity is arrived at by work and effort. And being meek and submitting to one another is a quality that is developed by effort. It doesn't usually come naturally within us. And because we are what we are as individuals, when we join together in a collective body, we tend not to blend. And we need spiritual and mature leadership to help us get past those differences and moderate them and set them aside and lead us in the way that we should go with a unified will and a unified voice. In 1 Peter 5 and verse 4, Jesus is called the chief shepherd. In the universal church, there is no leadership on the earth. The leadership only that's provided for among Christians universally is the Lord Himself, the chief shepherd. But on a local level, the Lord provides for spiritually mature men who possess qualities that enable them to inspire others and lead them. And that's what shepherds do. They, as spiritually mature men among us, they inspire us to go in the right way that we should go, and ultimately to be joined together in heaven to the chief shepherd. As we go through the body of the lesson tonight, I would like for us to concentrate our thoughts on some verbs that describe what elders do. Everybody's squinting up here. That's not anybody you know, I don't think. And I didn't put our elders up here because I don't want this to be pointed. It's not intended to, in one way or another, be a critique of our elders. But to just simply understand that in the course of this life, individuals, whether we know them or not, or whether it's us and our elders or not, there's just common principles and common thoughts that make this direction of the Lord applicable to any congregation of the Lord's people, watched over by any who qualify to be elders. So what's on the screen is theoretically Embry Hills or anywhere else. But let's concentrate on what elders, shepherds are to do, hence the verbs that we'll look at from the New Testament. First of all, if you turn to 1 Peter chapter 5, I mentioned that passage a moment ago, page 816 in the Pew Bible, if you're using one of those. 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 2, we won't read it, but we probably will come back to it later in the sermon. Acts 20 and verse 28, both contain this term as a verb. 1 Peter 5, 2, shepherd, there it is, shepherd the flock of God, which is among you, serving as overseers, not by constraint, but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly, nor as being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. Boy, there's a mouthful just in those couple of verses. But I want to point you to the verb shepherd here. It's a comprehensive term that isn't necessarily completely defined in this particular context, but I think it just simply involves being what a shepherd is to sheep. Whatever shepherd is to sheep, be that to the local congregation of God's people. And that may involve certainly leading them. It will involve protecting them from things that would do them harm. It would involve feeding them and making sure that they are provided for regarding their spiritual needs, to calm the sheep, apparently, by what I've read. Sheep, maybe because they have no much of it, any offense or defense, tend to be a little bit skittish. And you know, sometimes we can be that way. And we get agitated and we get bothered and we get up in arms about things. And one of the things I think that shepherds should help us in is calming us, helping us realize that the next little blip that comes along isn't in our major life-ending crisis, because undue anxiety can create an awful lot of difficulty for us and increase the difficulty of what we're facing. Sheep retrieve strays. Jesus uses this illustration in one of the parables. For those that are going away from the flock, shepherds looking out among those and seeing the wanderers and trying to bring them back. Of course, Jesus embodies, I think, all of these qualities that a shepherd is to sheep, himself again being the chief shepherd. And with Jesus, we just generally see the principle that it's all about the sheep. And I'm not going to go into that in great detail, because we did talk about servant leadership a couple of weeks ago. But it's about the sheep. It's not really about the shepherds. And it's not about wearing a title. And it's not about holding a position and being able to tell everybody, yes, I'm an elder at so-and-so congregation. It's not about that. It's about the sheep and caring for them and providing for them in every way that the Lord even does for His people. There is, however, in this overseeing and in this shepherding, there is rule. And there is some type of authority given to shepherds. And this is brought out in a couple of different ways, with a couple of different words. Because elders are shepherds doesn't mean they have no authority. Now, we said a couple of weeks ago, they don't have a goon squad. You know, they don't have a hit squad where if we don't line up, you know, the elders are finding ways to, you know, break somebody's kneecaps. They rule by moral suasion. And that grows out of our respect for these men, because we know them. And because we have, together as a group, put them in this position by the qualifications of the Holy Spirit, of course. But we put them in this position of leading us, and when we do, we're agreeing that they're followable. And we give them rule, and we give them right to be over us, because we acknowledge them to be so qualified to lead. There are several passages. There's only a couple we'll turn to, but one of them is Romans 12:8. If you want to take just a note of that, we're not going to turn and read that, but it does speak of He who leads. And I think, perhaps compared to some other New Testament verses, that probably is addressing elders. But I want to turn to 1 Timothy chapter 5, page 799 in the Pew Bible. 1 Timothy chapter 5. By the way, the word in Romans 12:8, the word we'll look at in 1 Timothy 5 and the next passage, 1 Thessalonians 5, all come from the same Greek root, proistemi, if you're interested. But this word is translated in one form or another to lead and to guide. 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 17. Let the elders who rule well, that's the word, the elders who rule well, proistemi, be counted worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in the word and doctrine. For the Scripture says, you shall not muzzle an ox while it treads out the grain, and the laborer is worthy of his wages. Here's the idea of an elder who is intensively laboring, specifically in word and doctrine, concentrating his efforts on teaching. And the same passage in the Old Testament that Paul refers to in 1 Corinthians 9 about supporting preachers financially is here applied to supporting elders. I don't want to go down this road very far, but I'll throw this out just as food for thought. I wonder why it is that amongst brethren, we have more concentrated on the notion of preachers being supported financially to preach the gospel, rather than placing some degree of attention on elders being supported to shepherd the flock. The one has just become automatic. We just expect that a congregation that can support a preacher, afford a preacher, even some, you know, that don't, that we help provide preachers. It's almost become an automatic that's a vocation. Preaching has become a vocation. And we provide for a man's needs to preach. And that's not wrong, certainly. But there's been an underemphasis, it seems to me, on financially supporting men to shepherd. And I wonder if we've been imbalanced on that, perhaps, through the years. That maybe the greater need in a local church is for shepherding of the souls. So, again, I don't want to make too much out of that, but file it away and give it some thought. Because this passage says that shepherds, elders, who are involved in the word and doctrine, laboring in that, we'll come to that word later, that they're worthy of their wages like an evangelist would be in his. Turning back to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 12. We urge you, brethren, to recognize those who labor among you. We talked about that idea of recognizing a couple of weeks ago. And are over you in the Lord. That word over you and the word rule well in 1 Timothy 5 and Romans 12:8, again, one who leads, they all come from the same Greek word. And it means to stand before, to lead, to attend to, indicating care and diligence. And so these are words that, again, verbs, action terms that describe what elders are to do. They are to stand before us. Not necessarily physically to give the announcements or whatever, but to stand in front of us spiritually and to lead us and to guide us. And the term in 1 Thessalonians 5, to be over you in the Lord. Again, not lording it over, as we just read from 1 Peter chapter 5. Not, as it were, seizing power for the sake of having power. Now remember what we said this morning about meekness and how meekness should view power and authority and talent and ability and resource from the Lord. It's having authority from God to lead. Not to drive the sheep, not to get behind them and crack the whip. That apparently is not how you get sheep to get them to go where you want them to go. But by relationship, the shepherd gets out in front of the sheep, like the picture we had here just a moment ago. The shepherd is out front saying, in essence, to the sheep, they don't understand English, but they're out there saying, we're going over there. And to get them to go over there, the shepherd goes over there. And the sheep follow the shepherd. And that's the way it should be in a spiritual way. Elders being examples to the flock. We just read that terminology. Elders setting the pace and setting the standard. Again, sometimes perhaps we've deferred to preachers on that. But in a local church, it's elders who should be leading and setting the tone and being in front of us and going before us and showing us in essence how it's done. You ever thought about what an oppressive responsibility that is? I know three guys in here that have thought about it. But I think there's probably a lot more of us who, in considering the work that they do in our clearer moments of thought and really trying to get a grip on what elders do, are amazed that perhaps there's anybody who desires the office. And yet, it's vital. It is a vital work that God would have carried out among His people, exercised among them because of the need for leadership. Because we're a diverse group and with various wills and opinions going all over the map, the elders, as it were, bringing us together as a unified people and showing us which way we need to go. By the way, it's interesting, the word proistimai that we're looking at in these three passages, Romans 12, 1 Timothy 5, 1 Thessalonians 5, is the same word where it speaks of a man ruling his family. So lest we say too quickly, elders don't have rule, it's the same word as a man over his family. I'm not suggesting the rule is the same. I am saying it's the same word and carries with it some degree of authority. And the right to direct. And in fact, again, they're over us in the Lord. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. In Hebrews chapter 13, there's another word that carries with it the idea of rule and authority. I haven't looked at Greek in a long time. I think it's hegeomai is how you say this, if you're interested. Hebrews 13 and verse 17, obey those who rule over you and be submissive. For they watch out for your souls as those who must give account. Let them do so with joy and not with grief, for that would be unprofitable for you. We've already said from 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 3, this leading and guiding, here it's rule over, is not as a Lord, simply to command that certain things be done, but as examples. Nonetheless, we do find the terminology here, obey those who rule over you and be submissive. They don't rule because they carry a stick. They rule over us because we've put them there by God's approval and according to God's qualifications. But we've put those men in those places. And we have essentially said, we trust you to lead. And we submit to your authority and leadership as elders. The picture is not one here of autocratic dictators. A group of men sequestered in their ivory tower and issuing commands to the little people. In fact, we're concentrating on the term shepherd in this lesson. That's the model. That's the model. But nonetheless, authority and responsibility to lead. I got to thinking about some illustrations in regard to this, another way in which we might think about it. These probably aren't perfect illustrations, but Martin Broadwell's been all over the world, and Joyce and several others of you here have gone on tours and whatnot. But you go to a foreign country, and you probably don't know the language, and you don't know how things work, and everything is new. And if you're on a tour, there's a tour guide, someone who is familiar. And you know, from living in London, we used to see this all the time, but you'd be out and about, you know, in the city, and you'd see an umbrella, you know, poked up in the air, and here's the tour guide, and you look for the umbrella, you know, and you didn't want the umbrella to get too far away from you, because there you might be stuck in Egypt somewhere, and you don't speak Egyptian. You just don't blend in with everybody else around you. So there goes the tour guide, and the tour guide is leading out of experience and wisdom and familiarity. And a tour guide doesn't wield authority in the sense of taking the umbrella and whacking somebody if they're not in line. But we, in essence, say to the tour guide, I'm following you because you know how to lead us here. I'm following you because I'm in the midst of a strange land and I need somebody to help me get to where I need to go and show me what I need to see. And you know, the tour guide, he's going to lead you past things that are of no issue and just not noteworthy, but he's going to show you the good stuff. Well, that's elders. You know, they're out there with the umbrella, leading and saying, we're going to try to show you the good stuff. Here are the things you need to concentrate on. Here's how you need to spend your time. You know, on tours and vacations, you never have enough time to do everything you want to do. And on occasion, I would be a tour guide in London, and I would take folks to the British Museum and say, okay, you got how? And I'd say, how much time do you have? If you got 2 hours, we'll do one tour. If you got 1 hour, we'll do a different tour. If we're limited on time, here's what I want you to see: this and this and this and this. Well, you know, that's the way it is with life. We're here a limited time. There's a lot of extraneous matters, non-essential things. And we need guides. We need shepherds to help us see what's really important. And to give us confidence to ignore the things that are not so important, so that we're living this life to its fullest. Well, moving along, we've got the term watch in Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 17 again. We just read from there. Obey those who rule over you and be submissive, for they watch out for your souls. This is a neat word. We talked about this a couple of years ago when we went through some of these lessons the last time we were searching for leadership. But agrupneo, it's probably not pronounced correctly. But the word here, watch, is interesting. It means actually to be sleepless. It means to be so attentive to what you're doing, sleep escapes you. You're expending yourself so much in the job and the responsibility that it's difficult to sleep. We talked a couple of weeks ago about a shepherd not being a hireling. He's not watching over the sheep just because somebody said, "Hey, buddy, you want a job? I'll give you a job. Why don't you go watch these sheep and I'll pay you a little bit." And then when the threat comes, the hireling says, "I'm out of here. They didn't pay me for this." Well, that's not the relationship that Jesus sustains with His sheep, and it's not the relationship that shepherds and local churches sustain with the sheep. They're not hirelings. They love the sheep, and the sheep love them. And they're so concerned about their welfare, they're so concerned about their needs, that sleep escapes them. And this is not just a figurative word. I believe this is true, and you can double-check me on that and ask our three shepherds, but I believe they would all tell you that sleep has escaped them because they were anxious about an issue or a particular soul or the direction of the congregation and where should we go and what decisions should be made. And so this idea of anxiety and concern because one is completely engaged in what he's doing as a shepherd and completely engaged with the sheep robs him of sleep, and thus we have the idea of being watchful. In Acts chapter 20 and verse 28, that's page 750 in the Pew Bible, I referred to this passage earlier, said we'd get there later. Acts chapter 20 and verse 28, Paul's speaking to the shepherds of the church at Ephesus. "Therefore take heed to yourselves and to all the flock, among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers, to shepherd the church of God, which He purchased with His own blood." Now, we've already seen shepherd, the verb, shepherd the church of God. But in the beginning part of the verse, take heed to all the flock. This means to turn one's attention to and to take careful note of. And as Paul goes on and talks to the elders here, first of all, in verse 28, he says, take heed to yourselves and to all the flock, and goes on and warns them about some even from the eldership will rise up in the future and be a divisive issue themselves among the brethren. As necessary as shepherds are to the healthy functioning of the local church and to me as an individual, let's not just leave this in the generic here that elders are important to the local church. Elders are important to us as individuals. And I wonder if you see them that way in your personal life. Do you see elders as being important to your spiritual well-being, thus creating a desire to know them and to be familiar with them and comfortable with them so that you can bring the issues of your life to them? As good and necessary as they are, when elders go bad, it's not a pretty thing. When elders are overcome by the worldliness of the society in which we live, when they succumb to lusts, when elders have the authority go to their head and begin to have the ivory tower mentality and think that the congregation exists so that I'll have somebody to rule over, huge damage can be done. And so Paul is encouraging the elders from the church at Ephesus, take heed to yourselves. Turn your attention to yourselves. Be careful. Take note. Remember we talked in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 1 this morning about meekness and gentleness and restoring those who have been overtaken in fault. Looking to yourself. Looking to yourself. Considering my own weaknesses and considering the vulnerabilities that I have. You know, in this regard, elders are leaders among us. At the same time, elders are people. There's a side to them in which they're sheep. They're one of the flock. And it's so important that those men serving in that capacity understand their own vulnerabilities and their own potential weaknesses and thus take heed to themselves. Then in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, we were there just a moment ago, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, Verse 12, we urge you, brethren, to recognize those who labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you. I love the definition that A.T. Robertson gives of this word, admonish. He says it's an old verb, and it basically means putting sense into the heads of people. And then he comments on his own, a thankless but a necessary task. Putting sense into the heads of people. Sometimes things that not only are brought to the elders, but at times brought to preachers and even to others in the congregation where people are having one problem or another in their life, you find yourself in the position of trying to put sense into people's heads. Because the problems that they are facing sometimes are created by a lack of wisdom and a lack of good judgment in what they've done in their lives. And so you're trying to restore some kind of sense of good judgment. And don't do this anymore, but do this over here instead, because it's going to turn out to your benefit and it's going to solve your problem. And how frustrating that is to keep working and working and working to try to put sense into the heads of people. And like Paul, they're kicking against the goads, kicking against the sticks. And on the one hand, it's frustrating from a personal standpoint. On the other hand, it can be deeply disturbing because families are at stake sometimes and marriages are at stake and people's souls are at stake. And it may be that the elders see the matter more clearly than the people involved. And their job, if you will, their passion is trying to put sense back into the heads of people. That's what this word literally means, admonish. To go back and make people be aware all over again of what's at stake and the principles that are operative in their particular situation, and persuade them, if at all possible, to do what is right. Then the last word to look at here is labor in verse 13. They labor among you and are over you in the Lord, admonish you. Again, this is a verse that's loaded. There's a lot of interesting and important concepts here. 1 Timothy 5:17, we talked about there, an elder who labors in word or doctrine. And the idea, again, is this is not an honorary position. It is a work. And it's not just a physical work. It's an emotionally, mentally, spiritually exhausting work. And oftentimes, those men who are serving in this extremely critical capacity are also working to support themselves and their families in a secular job. And so, it's labor on top of labor. It's laboring to support your family, and then it's laboring to support the brethren spiritually. And the emotional stresses can be enormous. The spiritual frustrations can be debilitating, even to elders. And this is not in the outline, but I would say even to those that are serving as elders, you have to find a way to sustain yourself. And sometimes you have to find a way to let the pressure off and to rejuvenate and renew yourself, lest the continual stress and strain of leading and guiding the congregation take its toll to where you may not be effective in shepherding God's people. Well, all of these verbs that we've been talking about in regard to what an elder or the elders do, they all suppose, I think, at the foundation, or presuppose, a basic quality, and that's the quality of relationship. Elders cannot rule, they cannot guide effectively, they cannot set examples, they can't counsel, they can't put sense into the heads of people, unless there is a relationship with those people. And we've seen that relationship a couple of weeks ago in talking about the shepherd knowing the sheep knowing the shepherd, and they follow his voice because they know them. But unless the elders know who is having, whether it be marital difficulties or know who's having challenges to their commitment to the Lord, who's having a job crisis and needs to be encouraged and built up, who's struggling with debt, and who's just being overwhelmed by the material elements of this life, who has an unresolved grievance with a brother, and how can they mediate and how can they help solve that? unless they know the sheep relative to who's not discharging their responsibility and their duties and showing signs of weakness. Who needs training as a teacher? Who needs a job to do? Too often we're looking at the role of an elder from the outside and we only see a little part of it. But the closer you get to understanding what the elders either here or in any congregation of the Lord's people are called upon to do, it's just staggering at how far this level of leadership and concern goes. And not just fixing people's problems, if you can at all, but helping develop people spiritually and bring them to maturity and increase their knowledge and motivate them to do what they know they ought to be doing. It is an astounding responsibility that really cannot be done without relationship. And that's why we talked about servant leadership and the importance of the sheep knowing the shepherd knowing the sheep. Sometimes among elderships there is an aloofness. There is a lack of approachability. And I've heard elders say this to me before, that before they became elders, they had circles of friends and they had relationships with people in the congregation. And once they were appointed an elder, that changed. And I don't know all the dynamics of that, but I think enough about it to say it ought not to be that way. You know, we can't stop being friends with our brethren that we now put in the position of leading and guiding us. And back to the observation, they're people. They're people like everybody else. And they need understanding and they need friendship and probably more so after they become an elder than they did before. But relationship and genuine intertwining and sharing of lives is so basic to an elder's and the elder's ability to function well. And so from the standpoint of the elders themselves and the standpoint of the congregation, the tendency toward aloofness needs to be fought. Whether it's because a man is now put in that role and maybe somebody's afraid of dominating his time or feeling like he's going to create the impression that he's got the elder's ear or whatever it may be. I mean, there's all kinds of things in which we might say, okay, now that Brother So-and-so is an elder, we just can't do some of the things we used to do together. I'm going to stay back here. And elders need to make sure they're approachable. And this goes back to the lesson even this morning on meekness. Part of the atmosphere created by true meekness is approachability. That here are men that we as individuals feel. We can go to these men. And we can make our personal petition to them about something we need, a weakness that we're having, and realize you're going to get a fair hearing, and you're going to get sympathy, you're going to get guidance, and you may in fact get a sharp word of correction if that's needed. But the bottom line is the confidence that I'm going to get what I need regarding my spiritual well-being. So elders must be plugged into the congregation and must be out there in front of them, leading them, so that the sheep are gladly and confidently following. And let me also add in that regard, elders are not mind readers. This is something that I've tended to see through the years of my preaching, and I'm sure elders have seen it in their experiences. But someone gets upset because the elders haven't responded in a certain way, and you ask the elders and they don't have any clue anything's going on. And sometimes we're so careful to hide our weaknesses or the problems that we're having. We don't want to wear them out in our sleeve. We don't want others to draw the wrong conclusions. And so it may be that we've done our very best to hide those things from others and then wonder where the elders were. When I came to that moment of great crisis and they were not even aware. Well, suffice it to say, the effectiveness of leadership and the elder's ability to carry these things out depend on relationship that works both ways. The sheep knowing the shepherd and the shepherd knowing the sheep. Well, in all of these passages we've looked at, I'm just going to list these because we've already read them. Obey and recognize, esteem, support, even to pray for. Look, if Paul needed the brethren to pray for him, if he needed associates to help him do his work, the apostles needed Barnabas. He was the son of encouragement by his attitude and character. Paul needed Timothy, Titus, Silas, Priscilla and Aquila, Euodia and Syntyche, and on and on and on the list goes. And Jesus needed his closest disciples to help him do the things God sent him into the world to do. Our shepherds, our elders need good brethren underneath them, supporting them, encouraging them, and good sheep will naturally obey and recognize and esteem and support and follow and pray for the shepherds. And unto the outcome in Hebrews 13:17, that they might serve with joy and not with grief. And so that's what good sheep will do. But others will not. Others will not be so attentive to the work of the elders. And perhaps it may be that, as we spoke of, with some, we become so consumed with our own lives, and it's all about us, and so focused on ourselves, we may not even think about what effect my behavior, my weakness has on the congregation, or what effect is my problem having on the elders themselves. And am I trying to see to them and support them and build them up, or am I one that is continually needing the attention and the energy of the elders? And that's not being said to make us reluctant to reach out to them. But perhaps we do need to look carefully at ourselves and say, am I building up the men who are shepherds of this congregation? Am I part of the flock who's lifting them up and building them up and helping them exercise the rule and the authority and the watchfulness that they should be doing relative to the congregation? Well, I hope the thoughts of the sermon tonight have helped all of us to gain a better appreciation of what elders do and how we can help them and how vital they are. But it presupposes being in the flock. And so as we close, we'll ask, are you even one of the sheep? Are you in God's flock? Are you in the temple of God? Are you a member of the body of Christ? Again, there's all kinds of descriptions. But at the bottom line, the question is, are you walking in fellowship and in harmony with Jesus Christ? And if not, we want to extend to you the invitation of the Lord to come to Him even tonight. And if we can help, the elders, me, or anyone else here can help provide for you what you need to make your life as it ought to be in the sight of God. And we can help you at this time. Would you come as we stand and sing?